You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Natalie, and we are the Art History Babes.
This is an Art History Babe brief on China's Forbidden City.
Da-na-na.
Before we get into all that, we got a few announcements to make. First off, FYI, everyone, we will no longer be posting our podcast on SoundCloud. So if that is where you typically listen to us, I hate to break it to you, you're going to have to listen to us somewhere else. You can find us on every other podcast provider. You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, on our website at arthistorybabes.com.
You've got a lot of options. We're not leaving you high and dry here.
If SoundCloud is your preferred podcast provider, we apologize, but it just doesn't make sense for us anymore. So we won't be on there. Also, fun thing to announce, the Art History Babes are going to New York City, and we want you to come with us.
Woo-hoo! We want you to join.
Join us for a 5-day party in New York City. We will be in New York City over winter break, December 18th through the 23rd. So if you are a student or an educator, hopefully you'll have some free time around then. We're going to be doing just like an Art History Babes art trip. And how it's going to work is we are working with a lovely travel company that is putting together a package of all kinds of fun activities as well as lodging. And then if you decide to join the trip, you will purchase that package. You're going to meet us in New York City. We're all going to stay in the same hotel.
Sleepover.
Yeah, we're going to have a big sleepover. We're going to drink wine and eat good food and check out art museums and do some fun like underground New York City art activities. We're going to hit all the big ones, the Met and the MoMA. We're going to go to Brooklyn. We're going to just do a lot of fun things. So if that sounds interesting to you, head to likemindstravel.com. Enter your info. You can just go. There's an Art History Babes tab. You can go to that. You can punch in your email address and you'll basically get updates on the trip. Once the package is all put together and we have an exact cost and everything, you will be the first to know. Make sure to head to likemindstravel.com so we can hang out in New York City around the winter holiday, because that just sounds lovely.
I mean, it really does. And that's coming from someone who's never been to New York City. So if you want to see me see New York City for the first time, this is the trip for you.
See Nat, see New York.
That's our hashtag for the trip.
Yeah, that's a good one. It should be a really fun time. I'm super stoked on it, and I'm super stoked for the opportunity to be able to hang out with some of you amazing listeners who have been kind of with us throughout this whole journey. We can all hang out. It'll be like art history camp, basically.
Which is all we've dreamed about doing since we started this project.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So definitely look into it. LikeMindsTravel.com. We'll leave a link down below for you. And
last announcement.
I want to talk to you guys about soap.
One of our favorite topics.
Particularly soap by Trinova. Trinova is a Chicago-based family-owned company owned by friend of the Art History Babes, Steve Wimmer. They make green plant-based natural soaps. Their products are made in the U.S. They're really high quality, good for the environment, or at least better for the environment.
Yeah.
There is a whole line of all different kinds of cleaning products, whatever your cleaning needs may be.
If you're not big into soap, I got some leather cleaner and that's been great. I've cleaned some leather boots with their leather cleaner and then conditioned them. And I gotta say, they looked pretty good.
Pretty snazzy. And then they also have your basic, like your multi-purpose cleaner, your dish cleaner. So
soap.
Trinova, they got soap. So definitely check them out. If you use the code HISTORYBABES, you get 20% off your entire Trinova purchase. Head over to amazon.com/Trinova. That's T-R-I-N-O-V-A. Use the code HISTORYBABES, H-I-S-T-O-R-Y-B-A-B-E-S, to get 20% off your soap.
Such a great deal, guys.
Okay, now is it time for the Forbidden City.
Not of the serious business. The Forbidden City can be found in Beijing, China, north of Tiananmen Square. It was the imperial palace and political epicenter of China during the Ming and Qing dynasties, which spanned from 1368 until 1911. The Forbidden City was built to house the imperial family as well as the emperor's many, many consorts and concubines. Commoners were once forbidden from entering the city, hence the name. But today, the palace complex is commonly called Gugong, which means former palace. And you can walk through parts of it. So after a series of violent rebellions, the Qing dynasty collapsed in 1911 and the last emperor, 6-year-old Puyi, abdicated the throne. In 1925, the palace complex was declared a palace museum by the state and the Forbidden City was named a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 1987.
I also just want to repeat what Natalie just said there, that the last emperor was 6 years old.
Six, people.
I want to make sure you got that.
Kindergarten.
Yeah, he was 6 years old. I can't even imagine what that existence must have been like.
Yeah, for real. Like, you're six. You're the son of the heavens. What do you want to do about this? Like, there have been a lot of violent uprisings. What do you think, Pooh?
What do you think about it?
And he's just like, can I have my Cheerios, please? Leave me alone.
Exactly. If I was an emperor at the age of six, the entire palace complex would be covered in like Lisa Frank stickers. Like,
out with dragons, in with rainbow tigers.
Absolutely wild. Let's talk about an earlier emperor. Zhu Di was the third emperor of the Ming Dynasty. Zhu Di's father was the founder of the Ming Dynasty. And then Zhu Di was the fourth son of the founder of the Ming Dynasty. In 1402, Zhu Di had to overthrow the current emperor, who happened to be his nephew.
That sounds pretty standard, dethroning your nephew.
Yeah.
I feel like that happened all over the world.
For real. Yeah. So in 1402, Zhu Di overthrew the current emperor of the time, who happened to be his nephew, and then he was proclaimed emperor. He adopted the name Yongle, which means perpetual happiness.
But also, like, who gives himself a nickname? Like, let's just call it out.
And he is also referred to as the Yongle Emperor. He reigned from 1402 to 1424. During the beginning of his reign, the city of Nanjing was the capital of China. During this time, the Mongols were trying real hard to get past the Great Wall. So Zhu Di basically just fled to Beijing and was like, hey, this is the capital now. He proceeded to tear down Kublai Khan's old palace, and he made a mountain out of the rubble that overlooked his new palace, the Forbidden City.
I mean, that's pretty badass. Like,
that's so baller. That's so baller.
It's pretty like steeped in toxic masculinity, but I gotta say, like, wow, I'm impressed.
Right? Like, I'm gonna build my own city. Also, you see that mountain? That was the last guy's city.
And like, Kublai Khan's famous for like tough, scary. And so like, he made this guy's palace a dirt pile.
I know.
Near his palace.
I know. That must look over his palace for all of time.
That's long game stuff right there, and I'm really into it.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk more about the details of the construction of the Forbidden City.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We have returned from our commercial break. We hope you enjoyed that message from our sponsors.
Support our sponsors, guys, because they support us. And yeah, that's enough reason.
All right. Construction of the Forbidden City. Construction of the Forbidden City was started in 1405 and finished in 1420. Approximately 230,000 artisans and millions of laborers worked to build the palace complex. The complex is 961 meters in length and 753 meters in width. To help you visualize, that's more than 100 regulation soccer fields.
Yep, now I've got a great visual.
The World Cup's going on right now, and then like think that times 100.
Easy.
The complex, composed of more than 90 palace compounds and 980 buildings, is the biggest complex in the world. It is surrounded by a moat that is 52 meters wide. And as we all know, you best not mess with anything that is surrounded by a moat. Mm-mm. Is that an old adage, as the old adage says?
Yeah, I think verbatim.
Do not mess with anything surrounded by a moat. It is a glaring do not enter sign. That moat's going to get you.
Yeah. If you try to cross a moat, you got what's coming to you.
I like that better. I think that should be the adage.
All right. So the architectural layout of the Forbidden City was designed to adhere to the ideal cosmic order presented in Confucian ideology. Chinese social structure was also formed according to this ideology. Therefore, it was used similarly within the microcity of the palace. The architecture was designed in accordance with the Treatise on Architectural Methods, or State Building Standards, which was an 11th century manual that laid out the proper design for buildings with regard to hierarchy of Chinese social structure. Love that hierarchy. Mm-hmm. The activities, ceremonies, rituals, and living quarters of the palace's inhabitants were organized around the individual's position within the imperial family. So the higher up in the ranks you were, the more space and servants you received, as well as higher quality and quantity of food and entertainment. So they were really meticulous, guys, about how they would calculate out how much food someone was getting based on their rank. It was very exact. I was kind of shocked by that.
It was a very specific system.
And just seemed like it would provide a lot of waste, because you know that not everyone of a higher status is going to be eating more.
That's a good point. I did not think about that. But yeah, I wonder.
I've been super fixated on waste lately because our world is burning. We're running out of resources. So it's very on the top of my brain.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I didn't. I mean, when you think about it, I guess it isn't much different than now. You know, there are certain people with a lot more resources and a lot more waste. And oh man, we're gonna get into a whole discussion about income inequality. We should probably just keep going. All right. Everything within the palace holds symbolic meaning. The exact location of the main buildings, the colors chosen for roofs, walls, and detailing, and the specific numbers used for design elements. So this goes back to what you were just saying. Like, everything was part of this very exact, very specific system. It all had a purpose in this greater hierarchical system that was attached to Confucian ideology. Animal statues on the roof guarded against fires and evil spirits. Think gargoyles, like it's kind of the same thing. Fires were a major concern. As the highest point in Beijing, the palace was at high risk of being struck by lightning during storms.
I think the highest point was the Hall of Harmonies. Ooh, don't quote me on that. But anyway, whichever building was the highest point, I think it burnt down 5 separate times.
Whoa.
Yeah, because this was before lightning conductors. So the tallest building in an area would get struck.
That's such a, I mean, just like imagine that imagery. The tallest building, the beacon of the palace complex, the imperial palace, like being hit by lightning.
Yeah. And then burning to the ground because it was back when something caught on fire. I mean, it was probably going to burn to the ground.
It was game over. Yeah.
Like, think about modern day advances with fighting fires. Like, we've a lot going on with hoses and tons of water and like planes. None of that, guys.
A lot going on with those hoses.
We know all about that in California, and they didn't have any of that in Qin Dynasty China.
And that's something I'd be interested in researching. Like, what were ancient firefighting techniques like?
Ooh, yeah, we should look into it because I'm sure China was on to something. Like, they were trying to solve that problem.
They were just leaving it all up to the gargoyles.
The gargoyles were doing a lot.
They got it. They'll take care of it.
Put little fire hats on them.
Yeah. Oh, that's cute. All right. So the Forbidden City was considered the center of the earth. Like was very common with historic civilizations, the ruler was likened to a god. The Chinese emperor was considered the son of heaven. Legend has it, the palace complex was constructed with a total of 9,999 rooms, which I was a little confused as to why this is considered a legend. Because can't someone just count the rooms?
Corey, that's so many rooms. Like, in theory, yeah, but do you want to do that? I don't.
Will someone pay me? Like,
that's true.
Pay me. I will count those rooms.
What happens when you lose count? I mean, that's tough.
I mean, it is. It's a lot of rooms. But I feel like this is a legend that we could prove. But
yeah, it doesn't need to be a legend. I'm with you.
Going back to the legend of it, this is because according to the spiritual beliefs of the time, God lived, or the God figure, lived in a heavenly palace of 10,000 rooms. So the Chinese emperor was the son of heaven, and then their god figure lived in this heavenly palace of 10,000 rooms, and the son should not outdo the father. So the son lives in a palace of 9,999 rooms.
Hierarchy!
Woo! Numbers! Hierarchy! Yes!
Maybe it's like 9,998, and that's why it's still legend, because they don't want to admit that there's like one less room,
or there's like one secret room or something. Ooh. Like, there's like a mysterious hidden
bad
room.
bad sign. It's important to remember that while the palace complex was like a luxury hotel adorned with beautiful art and filled with gardens, the Forbidden City was essentially a vast, beautiful golden cage, especially for the women living there. Those that lived in the Forbidden City were rarely permitted to leave once they entered. More so, once the emperor died, his concubines were banished to live in this particular place. I do not know what it's called. Four widows, and it was supposedly even less fun than the caged palace life. So you have that to look forward to.
Yeah, that's rough.
The Forbidden City is now defined as a modern museum and a historical site. It's currently open to the public and receives roughly 8 million visitors a year. However, only a small part of the complex is accessible to visitors. If you would like to learn or see more of the complex, there is a really great National Geographic documentary available on YouTube, and it garners you special access to the complex. They got to go in for some sort of anniversary and videotape it. I love the narrator in that documentary. She's fantastic and has this like very monotone speech, which I love because, you know, my voice. There's one part where she's describing an emperor and she says something and she's like, and he was a megalomaniac. And I love it so much. And she's like describing him like casually before and just drops it at the end. And a megalomaniac.
Yeah, no, it's a really good documentary. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, if the Forbidden City is interesting to you, you should definitely check that out. There's also a lot of like travel vlogs on YouTube of people who have traveled to the Forbidden City. There's one I watched where the guy is kind of the exact opposite of that documentarian. He is very high energy and very stoked to be at the Forbidden City. And so if that's more your vibe, you can check that out as well.
You know how YouTube works, guys. There's stuff for everybody.
And then there's also a really good, really informational, like 15-minute video that details the daily life of an imperial concubine. and it's super informative, just really well researched.
I know.
I was watching it and I was like, how do they know this stuff? Like, where did they get this information? Because it's very well done and gives you just like a full picture of what it was like to be a consort or a concubine of the imperial palace.
Yeah, which was not black and white. Like, there were parts of that video where I was like, ooh, that doesn't sound fun. But then the hosts were quick to point out that civilian life wasn't necessarily a walk in the park. So
exactly.
You kind of have to weigh the options. And I think for some of these concubines, it maybe wasn't so bad.
Yeah.
They got puppies. And you know, when Puyi came in, he was sick. So he's like, up the puppies. Let's triple the puppies, people.
Puppies for everyone. Yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting thing because in thinking about being the concubine to a megalomaniac emperor, you can pick that apart from a feminist perspective really quick and understand why that's problematic and hard. And yeah, I don't want
to... We're not trying to minimize that in any way.
You know, you also have to think about what was going on. When you have a hierarchy like that, you're going to have a lot of issues, just like psychological issues with jealousy and things like infighting between these very large mm-hmm. groups of women. Like, that's going to happen.
Internalized misogyny.
Exactly. Like, there's a lot going on there, and we could analyze that all day. I think I was reading through maybe a YouTube comment or something where someone was, for good reason, was pointing out all the reasons why being an imperial consort was not awesome. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing. Like, being a commoner at this time was very difficult. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe you did have your freedom, but, you know, it was just kind of getting through life in a lot of ways and lots of hard labor and things like that. Whereas if you were living in this giant imperial palace, yeah, you had gardens, you had a lot of other people and women to play games with. You had puppies. You were being fed.
And it depends too, because they had said that like one emperor was noted to have like more than 50 concubines, and then another one had like two. So it varied. Obviously, different emperors are different people. They're going to have different ideas of how things should be and different temperaments. So like civilian life, I think life as a concubine kind of mirrored that, where it could be probably pretty great for some people and pretty awful for others. And it just was kind of a whole gamut of experiences.
Yeah. And it goes without saying that that whole system is horribly steeped in patriarchy.
Yeah.
like we understand all the underlying issues. I hope everyone understands the underlying issues with that setup.
But as historians, we're talking about a point in history. It happened. This is how it happened. We're just talking about it kind of like,
yeah,
in that framework.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, I think it's really important to understand that it was not black and white, and that, yeah, in some ways, some of these women probably led pretty nice lives. And that is a thing, you know, it just speaks to the complicated nature of history and stuff like this. Like, it's never black and white. And speaking from a 21st century perspective, of course, it's not a lifestyle that I would want, but I have no idea what it was like to live during the Ming and Qing dynasties, you know? Mm-hmm.
If we could have been a rich, independent lady in the Qing dynasty living out somewhere on our own, we would have.
Yeah, but I don't think that existed.
We don't know that those women existed, so until proof that they did.
I hope there was some just like bad like independent lady in the mountain somewhere that got out.
Oh, I'm sure.
Did it.
I hope there was a whole community of them.
I know. And that they had gardens and puppies and played games and had freedom. That's what I hope.
Me too. Just fantasizing about a secret mountain lady town now.
Oh, that sounds so nice.
Doesn't it?
If someday we end up starting our own secret mountain lady town, I would not be mad about that. Yeah. If that is what my life has in store, that sounds all right. Forbidden City.
Yeah.
That was it. At least all we got on the Forbidden City.
There's a lot more. Big, guys. Biggest complex in the world. Did you catch that?
Yeah, there's plenty more out there. But hopefully this kind of... I mean, I didn't know very much about it at all until we researched it. So
the more you know.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't know, now you know. Forbidden City edition.
All right.
Jinx.
Dang it. She got me, guys. Time to go now.
Thank you for yeah, bye.
Bye. Oh, man. We got to do another one. We got to pull it together.
Dark History
Babes. Let's talk about an earlier emperor of China. Because that's what we're talking about, China.
If it isn't clear yet, we are talking about China.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.